Good afternoon. Okay, that's weird. Good afternoon. Okay, yeah, must be my microphone. Good afternoon. The time is of 24 minutes. I'm doing my arithmetic is a little, rusty. The time is 25 minutes left to the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. It's, well, we are your drive time show. So we're here until the hour of 6, as always. And as always, again, we have yet another interesting topic on discussion for you as you just focus on your steering wheel. Unless you're at home chilling, then sure, you can call in. But if you are driving, because our goal is for you to keep listening. And you can't do that if you are somewhere in a coma or worse, standing next to the devil or to Saint Peter or whatever figure you believe in your religion, tradition, or blah, blah, blah. But anyway, today's topic concerns the subject of education, especially in the, in the areas of a student exchange program, information exchange program between different countries. Now, for those of you that saw our poster, then you know by now that this is the education exchange program, or more like knowledge exchange through a higher education and higher institutions between Namibia and the Russian Federation. And this is stemming from call it a stakeholder engagement that took place at NUST involving the vice chancellor of which two main speakers, of which audios we have with Tina. We are looking at the time. We're like, should we share them? Should we not share them? But anyway, if you did not attend an event, but we're gonna make that decision like really fast. We'll make it to in your interest, of course, not ours. Always your interest. But a lot of things are pointed out now. The vice chancellor. The vice chancellor of NUST, Naumov, I've been trying to pronounce that name the whole time, Naumov, alongside Natalia Lukashina of the International Institute of Business Networking from St. Petersburg, Russia. This, Natalia Lukashina points out something very interesting, and that is complementary by design. I always like to, confuse that word with, by nature. Just a quick break while I, go and commit murder.
Mukungu elekwa tuko maikuto amina apidi kwa mavchaziva. Mvere kisema ep ato wakasin chav kamso. Zakale liferile. Mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Mvone maikuto amancha a imba ep. Mwikutwe kulibusi.
And welcome back. Finished committing my murder and I'm back. So where was I? Lukashina, that is of Natalia Lukashina of the International Institute of Business Networking pointed out something interesting about the complementary, at least, by design of the education system and the business environment. So basically, everything that you are teaching in the class, at least that's my interpretation of what what you're saying, that what you're teaching in the class must complement, the real world business environment. The very same way that the same thing that we want to see with regards to the classroom and a real world, a real world experience, experience when it comes to technical know-how and technical knowledge. That's be it agriculture or mechanics or electronics. What's in the class must complement what's going on in the real world. And, obviously this is something that is, Namibia and Russia, this is not the first, diplomatic relationship. This is not the first time, the two countries are establishing their diplomatic relationship. Remember back in 2022 or 2023, during, when was the Africa-Russia summit?
Please don't do the top notch.
No, I won't.
Helmut, the last time.
I promise.
Please don't do the top notch joke. Well, it was 2023. You're right.
Yeah, that was 2023. So we had our president, since I can use the example. point out that, after the interesting thing is after the top notch, he goes on to explain by telling the, the anchor that, you're probably too young to know this. Then he dives into the history of the two countries during, pre-independence times and, he really dives in, in history of the two countries, in his response.
Yeah.
Now, this one is not a, liberation struggle one. This is more of a knowledge exchange, especially in the areas of high education.
Ask the question. I'm listening. I can see the question now, but you've got a question in your head. Ask it.
Language, dude.
The language. But
I know, that's one thing that always fascinated me about our exchange programs and also, let me just say knowledge based or on all expertise or skill based, programs with countries. I take, for example, like Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I know a lady that studied, that studied medicine in Ukraine.
Mm.
And only later for me to find out that Ukraine doesn't actually use English as their official language.
But it's also a problematic scenario. For example, when I had to interview people because of the COVID discussion, as well as also from the Russia-Ukraine discussion,
mm-hmm.
I also had to understand, I thought we had a mission. A diplomatic mission in Ukraine.
In Kiev.
Dwight thought.
Only to find out that everything was going through Moscow.
Everything was going through Moscow. But let me also explain it like this, Helmut. If you now try and get just a basic tourist visa to Taiwan, you'll also have to apply through China.
Yeah.
You'll have to send your
all roads goes through Beijing.
It will go through Beijing. So even if as a Namibian wanted to go to Ukraine, you couldn't just there is probably a flight that will take you directly from Johannesburg to Kiev. And even though there is an embassy in Ukrainian embassy in Johannesburg, in Pretoria, the discussion would still have been a scenario, for example, that because of Namibia, you're a Namibian, Namibia and Russia's linkages, you still have to, there's some sort of a discussion clearance scenario happening there as well.
Yeah, and don't get any ideas of doing that trip now. It's not happening.
Yeah. Now, historically, Helmut, because our discussion, dear listeners, focuses and centers on the notion of, for those of you that probably saw our poster, because I didn't see it as yet, even though I know it, we designed it. The discussion, just to highlight to you, dear listeners, is a notion of looking at building closer ties. Now, you can leap as far as you want to the BRICS discussion. You will be correct. You can zoom in on directly Namibia-Russia relations. You will still be correct. The reason being I'm actually qualifying whatever pathway people wish to think about this in whatever entry point they want to take, Helmut, is primarily you have to look at it as a developmental issue. Developmental why? Well, because this is obviously a country, and I'm technically testimony here from our discussion that I did last year.
Yeah.
The one about the Atom Expo.
Yeah.
In terms of seeing what is in Russian schools. And that was just one school we went to, but still, it still gives you a bit of a highlight. What is in Russian schools? In Russian schools, depending obviously what kind of school it is, because I didn't interrogate fully what kind of a school it was, there was a division between primary and secondary.
Yeah.
However, they have a notion in terms of the kind of curriculum that they can teach. For example, if the school is found close to a mine, let's say there's a mining facility.
Yeah.
In the, close to the town, ne? And most of the parents work at this mine, or most of the parents of these learners work at this mine. So what they will realize from that particular visit that I saw, is that you will have two major sectors, dominating that local town's particular economic activities. Firstly, you will definitely have agriculture around it. And secondly, that'll obviously be the mining facility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can either be a farmer in close proximity producing something, and you can either be someone that stays in a town that has certain particular roles and jobs to provide for, you know, whatever is needed in the town. And then there's obviously the teachers at the school, and obviously the workers that work at the mining facility. So, short story long. Long story short, sorry.
I like that opposite.
Short story long, because I went long. The discussion from there was, what would be needed? What would you need to empower the learners with? Remember, Helmut, our discussion technically is about higher education to higher education.
Yeah.
But higher education is fed from secondary education. Now, in the Russian context, from what I saw there, so they were giving the children like vocational skills. They were giving them skill sets.
Children, like, at what age?
The learners. So this is obviously in the secondary school phase. So they were obviously giving them those particular skill sets. For example, you could learn about dealing and working with computers. Now try imagining a Namibian public school. How many of them do have functioning computer labs?
Mm.
And do they have dedicated computer teaching, ICT teaching teachers? For example, we satisfied, you and I, we looked at the library discussion across the public school system.
Yeah, when we were talking about library and archives.
Yeah, and literally there's a demand for librarians and archivists to work at schools, because you can't just build the library, because the other teachers have their subjects and their jobs to do. So you need a dedicated person to run this particular facility in the school, which means that once again, so as to avoid wastage, the Ministry of Education probably would have to meet certain particular sort of like foundational requirements. Like firstly, is there enough librarians to hire? Would they love to go and live in a place like Ochu or in Korejas or in Tsumkwe or in Helmut Kelme? Give me another far-flung town or the only activity you can probably do is stare down a bottle.
Seriously.
Well, I've heard it. I've met people like that. I've met them. And when we Namibians, we know this.
Stay down a bottle.
The only sane conversation you can have is probably with that bottle. But yeah. Which shows that those people have a lot of psychological issues. But anyway, yeah.
And we only have less than 3.
No, but you need counselors. You can't just put everyone in a mental institute. That would also include you and me, Helmut.
Well, I think it's, you know, for you and I, it's becomes you know, it keeps becoming more and more obvious by the day. But
we shouldn't scare our listeners.
No. Like you pointed out, practical skills, because practical skills is something that we are only catching up, you know, beginning to catch up now.
Yeah.
For a very long time after, you know, just for at least for about a decade after, or more like over a decade after Namibia's independence, and we saw that the education system was more theory oriented, and the practical, you know, practical or vocational institutions was not something that's very common, which is why to this day they are when you tell someone to go to a vocational institution, they're most likely to look down on it. So a lot of students that are in high school, even to this day, if you ask them what they would like to do, to do for a living when they go through, take for example, when they reach their maturity and they have gone through school, a lot of them are most likely to give you, you know, specialty type of, type of areas of expertise,
yeah.
Like those ones that are more academic oriented. Now, with the introduction of vocational institutions, we are beginning to realize that you need technicians every day. You are not going to need specialists every day. You need someone. You don't need a water engineer every day, but you need a plumber like all the time because your tap is gonna leak, your bathroom is gonna leak, and you don't need
someone who's gonna flush something down the toilet.
Yeah, someone
not supposed to flush down.
Yeah,
but anyway,
and then it jams the pipe. Oh, you know, I'm hoping it's something that was flushed by a kid because, well.
No, well, the downside is, like you said, Hamoud.
You know, throwing diet in there because, look, some of the, as much, look, I respect the traditional food, but some of these foods are not for the Western plumbing. Take some of the solid fruits that we eat, traditional, for example. Don't do that in my bathroom. Look, I know. That went south really fast.
Yeah, I was just trying to stop you, but okay. But it's okay. I mean, it's a Tuesday.
We love Tuesdays.
We love Tuesdays. But yeah, you were still saying.
It's important that Madam Lukashina points out that you want to have an education system that matches what's going on in the field. But she uses, you know, she explains that in terms of business. Yeah, you don't want to have the theory that is that's going in opposite directions with the practical reality on the ground.
Yeah.
And this is something that we are beginning again to realize that practical skills, again, technical skills and technicians are needed on a day-to-day basis. Basically, technicians make the, keep things running.
Yeah.
Even take an assembly plant, for example. Whether it's an assembly plant or all the industries, they are most likely to have more technicians than experts because you only need a few experts. But when it comes to technical application of those expertise, you need a lot of technicians. Yeah, like I used to the example of a plumber.
Mm.
An architect. You don't need an architect every day. You don't need a structural engineer every day, but you need take someone that did carpentry and woodwork.
Yeah.
Because every time your kitchen cupboards or your kitchen cabinet goes the doors goes loose, you don't call an expert for that. Even if you called them, how much are you gonna pay them?
Here's the thing, also, Hamoud. Let's interrogate the discussion in terms of the sectors that are not functioning. For example, just to take you back to what Lukashina said.
Yeah.
Now, for the listeners that obviously, just to give you some context. So this was a particular engagement between higher education institutions of Namibia, primarily their leadership. And, it was a panel discussion moderated by Natalia Lukashina from the International Institute of Business Networking, so it's IIBN, which is based in St. Petersburg, Russia. And that statement that you made specifically was about connecting, ensuring that what you produce is, that there's a supply into the market.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we have realized in Namibia is that Namibia is oversupplying in the specialty area, which has also primarily led to, for example, a discussion of some of these graduates having to find jobs outside of Namibia, i.e., for example, the care industry of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So who has backed this up already? So specifically, like the other day, I went to the IUM handover, the one about the equipment handover, specifically for the maternity, the midwifery training department of IUM, and the lady that provided the handover of the equipment and the lecturer that organized the particular extra training.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why they organized this little training, Amol? Because imagine how many times would a expecting mother allow a group of like 20 students to come and watch her deliver a baby.
Yeah, I don't think there's one that will be comfortable to do that.
And the motivation as to why this particular donation happened, or this handover of equipment happened, from this Namibian branch of this International Midwifery Association, was primarily a student. Now, the lady that's the representative of this branch, this Namibian branch of midwives, of the global branch, said she heard a student make sort of like a jokingly nasty remark. Not derogatory, but a nasty remark. You know, like there's an essence of cruelty in how this person is telling the story. And she highlighted, but it's not a precarious scenario, but it's a rather sensitive process and scenario for the mother delivering and the professionals who are there to assist her in this process. Yeah. Because the thing is, you're not there supposed to go like, oh no, this process is just so cringy. And you know, they just start throwing all those particular adjectives around, which technically is based upon a process that all of us have come into being, meaning yeah. That's how all of us came to Earth.
Yeah.
That we all went through that particular process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A handful of people obviously would have been born prematurely or through other certain particular, highly unique scenarios. But in most cases, we were all, you know, we all got into this earth in that particular process.
Yeah.
And she realized that to organize with the health facilities across the country, how many health facilities can tell you, okay, we've got a baby being delivered on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Oh no, Sundays we're off. No, there is no such scenario, which also shows you the slow rate of our particular population growth. It gives you an indication to something else, technically.
I know.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say it, so.
It's not just based upon that, Howard. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest aspect that misses from that thinking is we need Ministry of Home Affairs' birth registration data. Meaning, how many newborns are literally registered every year? And what is the mortality rate of those newborns? Meaning how many of them probably passed away.
Yeah.
And then you have to understand what is the replacement rate, meaning people dying
and people being born.
And people being born.
Yeah.
That's most the replacement rate that that is used, or the replacement theory being used in order to calculate population growth and decline around the world. So based upon that indicator, how then could, for example, like an IUM's case, how could they then try and bridge the gap to still capacitate students with the necessary sort of like basic understandings and basic, you know, sort of like basic handling of a scenario, then rather to bring in some particular training equipment or acquire training equipment that can help them sort of like with the basics already, so that they don't have to go and stand like 20 students in a classroom now watching the whole live delivery process take place.
Yeah, and throw in the cultural and traditional discussion. There are not a lot of mothers on the African continent that would be like, you know what, I think I'm free to, you know, to deliver my baby in front of, you know, 100 students so you can, you know, so you can teach them. Actually, you know, I think that can easily be connected to the ongoing, you know, debate, you know, where you have where you have people polarized. This is with regards to the donation of bodies for you know for education purposes to the
cadaver
medicine. Yeah,
it's known as a cadaver. Yeah, they need cadavers to work on.
Yeah, that's a fancy one. But it's medicine. But look, the thing is, these students need real life. You know, for a very long time, you know, pigs and mice are all, I think this day pigs and mice and sometimes rabbits are used in a lot of science experiments.
Mm.
Because especially pigs have closely, they have the anatomy that closely resemble us, minus the nose. I don't know where that came from. But you know, what you see is that a lot of people are polarized, some of them for traditional reasons, some of them for religious reasons. And sub, you know, everyone that is, you know, that subscribe to the whole, you know, to advancing scientific scientific ideas in the country, especially for medical students, is, you know, is saying, okay, I don't mind. Now, here's the thing. You're going to have to sit your relatives down and tell them that, you know what, if I die, there is not going to be any casket because, well, my body is...
Okay, factor in the people that put themselves on organ donation lists who they have to tell their relatives, you know what, guys, when I pass away,
uh-huh.
I'm going to be empty inside.
Yeah, my kidneys I donated to.
The lungs, the liver, certain other parts.
There's going to be a traditional village hearing after that speech.
They'll ask you, are you dealing in muti? I'm like, no.
They're like, okay, so now that's witchcraft. But look, some of these things, you have to understand that this is a whole new way of doing things now. So it's not really surprising to see that a lot of people are not easily accepting of the idea even of donating bodies.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, the guys that are making caskets.
Please use cadaver, bro. Don't use the word body because now the police will call us alive on air.
Yeah, like, okay, where did you hide it? Oh, relax, guys.
Use the word cadaver. Yeah,
now, well, here's the thing. First of all, I don't think,
You'll remember, you'll answer that phone call, not me, for using bodies. But anyway,
those guys will be here. One thing I know is, okay, look, I came across one meme on social media, and that said, you know that English that's spoken at the police station. Some of us just keep quiet because they have guns.
But it's not to agitate them. It's just to make sure that the handcuffs don't land on you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we have a lot. Look, technology-wise, as in especially electronic components, we are good with that because there is no, electronic components, especially even when you are working on them as a student, they barely raise any moral or traditional value or religious value type of questions.
Mm.
But medicine have always had that problem. You know, I was reading about this other French guy who I think, started studying human cadavers, and he had to dig them out of graves. Okay, now I'm just giving people ideas.
Oh, so he was a grave digger.
Yeah.
He was a grave robber.
Grave robber. So dig them out of graves, so, you know, graves of, so he can study. Now, we're talking about, somewhere between 13 to the 1500s here. Now, to the 13 and 1500s here, what you have, especially in most parts of Europe, is extremely, it's a religion at its most extreme.
Yeah.
Which is why, one of the very dark history of the US is the Puritans. Because these guys set people on fire over someone's dream. I had a dream that this person was witching me, therefore, well, and most of them were women. Because, well, you know, again, you know, there was a lot of religious driven type of point of view. But now what we have here is something that is more, again, clashing with our traditional norms.
Yep.
We want to advance our medical industry. Now, to advance the medical industry, the personnel that you are training to bring about that advancement, they need access to, unfortunately for you and me, one of those things they need access to is cadavers. And they are not going around robbing graves. They're just asking that you, while you're alive and kicking, you voluntarily donate.
But we also had an instance of, there was a time where people were robbing gravestones at one time, specifically in Windhoek. But, yeah.
Gravestones?
Yeah.
Yes,
I know, but it's obviously because it was a valuable particular resource, marble.
First of all, how do you advertise that?
Go and ask those guys. They were very clever.
Yeah, like
they were super intelligent. Don't worry, someone else's name is there.
Recently buried,
no. Okay, like just 2 weeks back. But anyway, so the discussion, Helmut, is you are. You are right. And also the particular point that I made a little bit earlier in terms of the midwifery training.
Yeah.
Because what the particular engagement, and we'll have the audios a little bit later, dear listeners, just ultimately factor that in. But one of the presentations was also about, for example, from NUST's particular vice chancellor, that being Errol Namop, Mr. Errol Namop, who himself also highlighted specifically how Namibia and Russia could try. Now, it was his particular contribution was based more on a notion of international relations, trying to build closer ties, because we have to recognize, Helmut, also that in a Namibian context, some of our universities, I'll actually call it the big three.
Yeah.
All three of them technically already have like partner. They're part of some sort of a partnership agreements with other universities, either in China, either in the rest of Europe,
yeah,
wherein they can have exchange programs.
Yeah.
So I know that the Finnish, one of the Finnish universities in Finland can send students over to Namibia and vice versa. I know from my alma mater, sometimes it's also German or Austrian students.
Mm.
I just haven't seen Finnish, I know not Finnish, French, but I've seen American students, for example, also at my alma mater, and it was related to the business school. So each particular, let's call it like each, the particular like faculty has their own particular sort of like, exchange, discussions taking place. And then there's obviously also the notion in terms of these particular exchange programs also incorporating the opportunity for you perhaps to go and live there for 2 years while you are finishing your, you know, your qualification.
In whatever course you're doing.
Yeah. But you'll just be experiencing university life on the other side of the world. Like, for example, I spoke to my brother, because I tried encouraging my brother, my younger brother, the one after me, to try and do one of those exchange programs. I also had the opportunity, but I was at that stage working, and you obviously already have commitments and responsibilities that you have to be aligned with. So I couldn't just resign and then
hop on a plane.
Yeah, all the way. And it was also a discussion of, you've got to, it was like a lottery system.
Yeah.
Those that applied, then there's a lottery system taking place between there. Instead of it just being, okay, if any of you are interested, you can apply to the program and then we'll see. Yeah, they applied a lottery system. I was also like, nah, I'm not in the mood for lottery system.
You're not into gambling.
Yeah,
either.
I don't want that kind of a scenario. And so I tried encouraging my brother, my younger brother, and he told me that he spoke to a guy that came back as a fifth year, a master's guy in something psychology, either in industrial or in clinical. And he asked the guy, so how was it for him? And the guy said, yeah, it was, because it's always just from second year to third years that are allowed,
mm-hmm,
that you can participate in that. So what it sometimes also does, it doesn't mean that you go and do that that institution's course. You're not going to do anything there. You're still finishing, let's say Helmut is still finishing his law degree of the institute here back in Namibia.
Yeah.
But there.
They're halfway across the
planet. You're finishing it in Austria.
Yeah.
That's all. You're just doing technically distance learning via.
Sure. Let's go to Austria.
Hey, man. No, Austria is a pretty nice look.
It's all fun and games until someone comes back with a mustache. But
no, until you come back with missing toes and fingers because of the cold, because you didn't pack for winter.
Ooh.
For an Austrian winter.
Yeah. Now, you know, when you look at it, okay, like you pointed out, we already have, call it a high institution, you know, knowledge through high institution exchange with a lot of countries. We have, China, India, we have the US. And now we are looking into basically, more like, take that to the level of, to the level of these countries that's with Russia.
Yeah.
Now, what are the benefits there? Then, if you look at technology-wise, both, India, China, and Russia are both really advanced when it comes to technology and its application. This is not technology as in, this is not just the technology as in you are just sitting and then studying it out of book. We're talking about research and development of advanced, in advanced fields.
Yeah.
Everything from basically, commercial and, both commercial and military application, especially when it comes to different, different types of technology. Now, that means, Okay, you were, you know, you were there when it comes to that, you were in Russia for the Atom Expo. Mm. So there, you know, take for example, nuclear technology is way advanced, like, you know, nuclear enriching type of advance. Now, obviously, we're not going to, obviously.
Well, also to throw a little bit more, how can I put this? Sort of like how impressed I was, was that this was hosted at a science and technology university there in Sochi. So it has a, it's the Sochi Science and Technology University. So this university, Helmut, had literally has a space shuttle in the entrance. Yeah. I thought I showed you the photos.
So, you know what that means?
So it had a shuttle, and one of the Namibians that went with me decided to go and try and climb in that thing, and she was told, please, it's just there for illustrative purposes, not there for us going there on a, get on the magic yellow bus. No. also entering, as you also entered specifically into that particular university, it almost looks like it's completely indoors. Mm-hmm. So it's not like our universities where
it's an open sky.
Yeah, open sky, and you have to navigate nature between the gate or where the taxi drops you off and the classroom. Meaning you could, in between, you can have the asset forfeiture guys in between. You
just
can
chilling there,
or you can have like other, you know, particular anomalies pop up. But literally, how this particular institute itself to provide obviously the nurturing ecosystem for, you know, for study and for learning is literally it's completely covered by roof. We didn't explore the entire campus, but the whole thing was literally like that. So working from there, the indication is that you can obviously sometimes see that Namibia can learn from certain particular countries. Now, that other book that I've got, I didn't bring it with for today, which is the BRICS book, how, you know, the other developing nations can learn from the BRICS members. Namibia has three particular strategic partnerships besides South Africa. If you just ignore South Africa for now, because we have a very close relationship. Even though I read the other day an article from another opinion piece in one of the other media platforms from a Kenyan journalist who just came and spoke the loudest bunch of rubbish in my life, who's just saying, yeah, we must just sort of like get ourselves out of SACU and depeg from the rand. And he doesn't answer the question. So how do you then ensure that you stay economically viable after the depeg? Because the depeg is based upon what value proposition do you have in your economy? Your value proposition is not based upon just selling to the United States. And every day, how many times do you know from now will the United States have similar Donald Trump-like politicians who will just decide to throw things
in it? Right and center.
And here, do you know what's the worst part of what Trump has done? Trump negotiated the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. He renegotiated in his first term. So the agreement he tore up when he was inaugurated was his agreement that he tore up.
Oh, yeah, I remember John Stewart making fun of that.
Yeah, it was his agreement that he tore up. He negotiated it, Helmut, not Joe Biden. He negotiated that agreement. Now, imagine a world where you've got politicians like that coming in now into the West.
Where they have, flip-flop type of foreign policy.
Exactly.
Foreign policy, yeah.
And they can decide, okay, since I did my, you know, the last international relations discussion, I was happy, but now I need to change things up. Mm-hmm. This is not a company meeting. This is not a boardroom meeting. This is a country to country discussion. This means you've got to check over 5 years, 4 years, 5, 6 years, 7 years, what the impact has been. And it's one of those reasons why Namibians, as unfortunate as Namibians, if you take a look at our education sector with this AS levels situation, you can't just go and say, yeah, pull the thing out. The question you have to ask is, first, you have to assess whether or not there has been something that has worked or something that has not worked.
You know, when you bring up the word assessing, that brings up the type of discussion, like, types of discussion like, like, okay, I came across one guy on social media that made a very compelling argument. At least he managed to convince me over why it will take, developing countries a very long time to manufacture heavy machineries. Take, for example, the automotive industry.
Yeah.
That, the type of, okay, you can say, okay, how difficult is it is to make a car? I know how an engine works.
Mm.
But the type of machines that's used to make an engine, there are not a lot of countries that make them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like saying, okay, you know what? I know how a cell phone works. I can, it's very easy to make a cell phone. Let's start making cell phones. Until you realize that, basically it's a form of 3D printing, which is how the lithography machines, make your computer chips.
Yeah.
But the degree of, of precision that's involved there is, for the most part, that's involved there requires heavy, a very high level of specialty. That's not even the biggest problem that you have to deal with, because now you have to, you have to figure out that, okay, now that I've seen, how a microchip works, how a computer chip works, how do I go about making one? And then he realized that company one that makes the lithography machine, basically a printer of microchips, there's only one company that makes those machines, and it's based in the Netherlands. Are you sure they will just, easily give you that technology? It's not going to be that easy. It's heavily guarded.
It's not. Helmut, for example, there's this misunderstanding, for example, here in Namibia, regarding the development of the certain particular technologies.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start from something that you and I have already covered. So Namibia, we obviously now know, you and I, that Namibia will now try and actively develop the creative industry, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you go and look at the template of Hollywood, Bollywood in India,
yeah,
and Nollywood in Nigeria, some of the particular details, you and I, and I have also covered in other particular discussions here on Eagle FM, whether it be on the business and economic segment or on the home run, has been a scenario of, do you have consumers in Namibia? That's the first thing that you first have to satisfy.
Yeah, the equivalent of that to the Peugeot discussion is, congratulations, you're assembling them, but who's going to buy it?
Yeah. Or the notion in terms of, how many people in the country have disposable income? Or how many people, like the labor force survey, how many people are employed with regular income to buy from you regularly?
Above $1,000 a month.
Yeah. The first person must at least earn, most of these people must at least earn $10,000 a month.
At least.
At least.
Yeah.
So when you look at scenarios like that, now you come up here saying, yeah, I want to open up a cinema. And the first question anyone will ask you, so where are you going to open up that cinema? And how are you going to have that cinema? You can have a cinema, Helmut, mm-hmm, with almost anything. You can start a cinema with almost anything. The question is, how regularly do you think that you will be able to make money?
It all boils down to that.
Another scenario is, for example, let's also take another discussion. Making a movie. Let's say you want to make a movie.
Mm.
The first question is, so how do you want to make your movie? Because in America and in Nollywood, obviously Nigeria, and even in India, they know what their business models are. They know what their business models are. So their business models are based upon a cinema. So if you want to generate or build up the local Namibian cinema or movie making industry,
mm-hmm,
how do you empower this industry? The first thing being, you need theaters or cinema theaters across the country. You can't just have one in Windhoek or two in Windhoek who are technically franchise agreements from, mm-hmm, South Africa.
Yeah.
And you basically can only screen South African and internationally made stuff here. And another scenario is ultimately also associated to who promotes the movie, who promotes the movie production. Because that has also been one of the biggest problems, for example, in the music production element. Who promotes the musician and the musician's work? Now that was supposed to be the record labels. But have the record labels done that? So what they would sometimes do is they have some of these artists in Namibia showing up at nightclubs, and the nightclub is not really the best, in some cases, not the best places, but sometimes that's how the hidden gems are found. For example, that's how Ed Sheeran became the Ed Sheeran he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anyone knows about Doja Cat's success story, I heard, because she did a video during, she did a YouTube video during COVID. That's how Doja Cat became the Doja Cat we know.
Thanks to social media.
No, but it's a wonderful video. You should also watch that one.
Just
go watch Doja Cat, the Moo song.
Yeah. I think I missed that because of the Hawk Tour, but.
No, Hawk Tour wasn't during COVID. Doja Cat is before Hawk Tour. Hawk Tour is now almost on the verge of being taken to jail because of.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But everyone was making fun of Hawk Tour, you know. Split on it.
Now, if you don't know what that is, heaven for you is, you are going to get in, you know, no checkpoint.
Yeah, but if you do look it up and you go and see it.
Don't Google that for the sake of your sanity.
Please.
Unless you have money for therapy, you've been warned. Now.
So you and I, we've already been, what do they call that word?
No, it's too late for us. Save yourselves.
Yeah.
All the partnership, I'm glad you summarized it in the script, like the different partnership Namibia has with different countries when it comes to student exchange or knowledge-based type of exchange with other countries like India, China, and the US.
Mm.
Now, one thing that you see is that, when was that? 2020? Was that December somewhere in 2014? One thing that was, a year or two ago. One thing that was published was that, 2014.
Yeah.
From 2011 to 2013, we're looking at 2011, 12, 13. We're looking at a period of three years, give or take a few months. That is when, in that short period, China poured more concrete than the US did in the entire 20th century. Now, if you look at, if you look at the architecture that's coming out of China, what you're going to see is that, China is basically building bridges, between, I don't know, two gorges that will give you a very panoramic view of hell.
Yeah.
That's how high the mountains are. I think one of the highest, once it opens, I don't think it's opened yet, one of the bridges that's still under construction is going to be the highest. Now, I'm not saying let's go on a construction spree as much as I would like to say that, but what I'm admiring is the technology that's used in those, construction projects. Because one guy points out that if you are going to pour that much concrete in that short period of time, that means you must know what you are doing. You can't do that by crossing your fingers. That means for you to know what you are doing, you are running an extensive level of research and development, which more often than not happens in universities.
Mm.
It's
visualized even in DeepSeek.
Yeah.
Or in, what's the thing? DeepSearch. What?
DeepSeek, the AI. It's DeepSeek.
What happened with DeepSeek, Helmut? DeepSeek literally was based upon a database because the inspiration for DeepSeek didn't come from an IT department of a university or even of a research company. It came from a private banker. It came from a guy with money. So it came from a guy with money that approached a bunch of university students saying, listen.
You're right. It came from.
Let's try and do something different.
Billionaire. And he was made fun of that, this just, a billionaire's hobby.
Yeah, he's probably making, but he proved the world wrong. You don't have to run on Sam Altman. And that's why it literally threw the whole US AI development discussion into the sea.
Yeah.
Because everyone is now asking, so why is Sam Altman one of the richest men in America? And all he's doing is just large language model development and research. Why is he so rich? And then you get to ask the question, so what kind of technology are you utilizing if a bunch of Chinese university students who are probably not even being paid for that They might be paid. I'm just joking. I'm just joking. They might be paid.
The guys pulled off an AI language model that could rival ChatGPT at a fraction of the price.
Yeah.
At a fraction of the time.
And all it needed, and the scenario from that was technically, is that it needed to be able to run on current and let's say slightly older generation technologies, but consumer technologies. Now,
they made it open source. Now that was just brutal.
Now I'm tying you back to our discussion of the IEA report and AI.
Energy generation
and AI is energy consumption. Now what the DeepSeek guys technically showed everyone is that potentially there might be enough ICT infrastructure that was already invested.
Already in existence to run.
Yeah. All they probably needed was a scenario of, because Helmut, I can access DeepSeek.
Yeah.
From Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
So the understanding even to say that DeepSeek is not just behind the Chinese firewall. Mm-hmm. You know what the Chinese firewall is?
Yeah.
The Chinese internet that's literally divorced from the rest of the world.
Like everything happens there.
Just in that country. But for DeepSeek to be available to me as a Namibian, this ultimately should show any other African that what the West is telling you in terms of research and development can be done at a fraction of the price and even be done at a Namibian dollars price tag.
Now, you see, this is where the problem now of two things. Unfortunately, capitalism and bureaucracy now comes in because one of the biggest problem that you see, like Bill Maher or John Stewart points out that the Chinese build a bridge in less than a year.
No. Speak about the high speed rail of China.
Oh yeah, no that.
That thing, when California announced they wanted to build a high-speed rail.
Oh, yeah, that.
That was in 2010, dear listeners. The Chinese, the next year, also announced they're gonna also roll out their high-speed rail. But in between, the state of California has...
They start debating what to name it,
and sometimes also where the funding is
going to come from. Environmental activists who start coming and say, don't put a road there. And
by the time that the thing, and what they were still trying to do, the public stakeholder engagement scenario,
mm-hmm.
China had already built half of the current high-speed railway infrastructure.
Isn't that like the same here? I mean, just propose a project.
When they got to 2016, China was halfway done with China.
They haven't even started yet.
When they got to 2024... This thing was shelved in California and literally China had completely covered China with high speed rail infrastructure. Now, all the economists were apparently telling China, but you're just building roads and railway lines into nothing. Helmut, if you can get to your destination
mm-hmm.
within a reasonable amount of time and you at least know I can look at the scenery next door. I don't have to drive long distances, but I can take a train ride. Like you just explained, that over that massive gorge.
Mm-hmm.
What's the issue? Because here's what it helps on. It spurs on local economic activity. The very thing that Africa does not have.
Yep.
Because the AFCTA's biggest problem is that we still have to define to each other infrastructure discussions. We still have to define to each other standards discussions. Then we still have to define to each other, okay, whose taxation principles and policies
is
going to be applied. Then we have to define to each other, okay, whose money do we use? And if some of us decide to use US dollar and EU, and Euro, and what's the other one's name? And there's a third one. US dollar, Euro, and pound. We're going to be in problem. Then this AFCTA will not work.
Now, on the discussion of whose currency to use, that's going to be one heck of a discussion. Let's take a quick break and we'll continue. Actually, you are continuing.
Yeah, I'll continue after the break.
Yeah,
I'll
continue on the after the break. I'm going to, to Pratt Afrikaans.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon-flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store.
And welcoming you back, dear listeners. And ultimately, yes, you'll be alone with me up until at the top of the hour at 6 o'clock. And ultimately, that's as we quickly just highlight some of the particular talking points that we've technically centered on. Now, at the start of this particular scenario, and before I actually continue, we have to also listen to some of the particular takes that came from this particular panel discussion. One of them obviously being the Vice Chancellor from NUST, that being Mr. Errol Naumup, who he also highlighted in terms of how Namibia and Namibia and Russia technically can actually try and leverage the good international relationship that it has with each other and with each other and primarily also how to build closer to each other. Now, at this particular notion, dear listeners, we'll be coming back right after this audio clip, and then we'll just have a listen and then get into the last part of today's discussion.
Time just simply to acknowledge the ambassador, extraordinary and plenipotentiary of the Russian Federation to meet us and CEOs both in Namibia and Russia. Good morning here in Namibia and anywhere you're connecting from. Pleasure to have you on this call. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored by this opportunity to reflect on how Namibia and Russia can strengthen educational and research collaboration to ensure the long-standing bilateral relations between our two great nations.
Yes, for sure.
Allow me to just highlight the areas that I would focus on. So you were saying something? We'll be speaking a little bit about...
Not the problem. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Now, allow me to highlight the areas that I would like to discuss this morning. The first one is our mandate as a university and what our educational philosophy is. The second one is just to give you a sense of the current cooperation that exists between our university and various other Russian universities and institutions of higher level. And then I would like to make a proposition to this platform on how we can enhance academic partnerships and what methods we could use to further have a sustainable cooperation between two great countries. Allow me to look at, to give you just a context of what our mandate is as a university. We transitioned from Polytechnic of Namibia. We are formerly known as the Namibia University of Science and Technology. We transitioned in 2015, so this is our 10th year as a university. But despite our recent establishment as a university, we are an exceptional world-class university. And we are one of the most sought-after universities in terms of research and innovation collaboration with other universities around the world. And I would highlight why I'm saying that. The first is that we've, over the past 5 years or so, attracted more than $1 billion in research funding. This is funding predominantly from outside of the country in partnership with many European and other universities. And also recently we've seen an uptick of cooperation with Russian universities. That gives you a sense of how we are most sought after as a university. The other aspect that would perhaps be interesting to this platform is that we have recently graduated more than 4,000 postgraduate students. These 4,000 postgraduate students in master's and PhDs at the honors level are focusing on projects that are applied research, and particularly applied research in collaboration with industries, both local industries as well as global industries. So that gives you a sense of how we operate as a university. I must also point out that the industry locally and globally share our educational philosophy, which is means at most, which means we do believe that academic knowledge cannot be for its own sake. It must be practical and applied, and particularly be linked to the industry research and development areas. And as a result of this, we've established what we call a technology ecosystem. This is a small Silicon Valley of Namibia where we have attracted global companies to establish their R&D, research and development areas here in Namibia. For example, we have the Huawei Academy here at our university. We have the Samsung Academy at our university. We also recently launched the first Bloomberg Financial Intelligence Laboratory here in Namibia, which is arguably the largest Bloomberg Financial Lab in Africa. We do believe that this sets ourselves different from many other universities because it shows you that we are industry-oriented university. The other aspects that may be of particular interest to Russian industry is that we have got what we call Science and Technology Park in Woodreds that would focus on new emerging areas of.
Now, primarily, dear listeners, the indication obviously is looking at the partnership in terms of Russia and Namibia building towards a high education, if you could call it a mutually beneficial scenario that ultimately speaks towards how this can be leveraged. Now, yes, each of the particular higher education institutions in the country have their own specific, if I can call it like zones of influence that ultimately translates in a notion, for example, to the notion in terms of what is their speciality, what do they focus the most on, meaning what is their largest departments. Yes, one obviously would say technology, other one would highlight the aspect of management, and another would obviously highlight in terms of, you know, being as broad as possible in terms of what they have on offer, and then ultimately trying to strengthen that broad offering in terms of any kind of student that obviously subscribes to it and ultimately tries to achieve skill sets. Now, Another strong particular indicator that I highlighted to Helmut just before the break, which I also partially left off, was a discussion of what do we have to see coming through from the basic education level into the higher education level of discussions. Now, this is where I actually then branch out into this notion. Now, if you have to look at what you actually want to see manifesting in your economy, one of the best sort of like manifestations is usually in the notion of research and development taking place. If I have to pull up, and like I did last year in our discussion that we had about the researchers, if you have to pull up the notion on terms of how much researchers do we have? How much researchers are actually employed by various institutions? How many researchers are actually funded? Because you can get guys that actually work for an institution, or guys that ultimately are like freelance, they call them knowledge-based workers, but they are knowledge-based workers in terms of they can work for smaller contract scenarios in terms of providing you a contract-to-contract based sort of like engagement. Or, you know, that's ultimately the kind of level of work that they do for you. Based upon these particular indicators, you then realize that somehow this obviously also has to translate into something that you should see happening in your economy. Now, at the start, guys, just taking you back to what I mentioned a little bit earlier, when I saw specifically in that school in that Russian mining town in Dalur that they had a computing lab on the one side, they had a it was not fully home economics, but they did call it home economics, but you could be taught how to have the basic skills in cooking, as well as also the basic skills in terms of needlework and sewing and other particular sort of like, I don't want to say fashion design or even seamstress work or, you know, being a seamstress, but just having those basic skill sets in terms of being able to start something from anew. And if you guys remember that I've continuously highlighted specifically that we need to make our own clothes here in Namibia, and we need to produce our own particular sort of like soft industry products in the country so that we're not overtly reliant just on the South African industrial complex to supply to us. Reason being, and this is now ultimately where I've thrown a little bit of a rebuttal to this one particular opinion piece that I read earlier in this week. Well, this week is only 2 days old. It's technically an opinion piece from last Thursday in this one platform. I read the particular opinion piece and I was like, but this guy is just saying just depeg and just walk away from SACCU. But here's the thing. No one is talking about using SACCU to your advantage. No one. No one is talking about that. Now, if you don't know what I'm implying, well, obviously the re-education process is, you know, completely free. First and foremost, what is the reason as to why South Africa is known as Africa's most industrialized country? Even UNECA, with the automotive consultation discussion that I attended the other day that we had discussions here about at Eagle FM on bringing to you, dear listeners, What was one of the fundamental things that the UNECA guys also knew? They highlighted specifically that South Africa is saturated. South Africa does have space and they do have opportunity to take on more of the automotive industry and its value chain discussion in their established, well-established automotive manufacturing industry and value chain manufacturing scenario. They can still take on more. They actually, not just that they can take on, they've actually gone to a point, dear listeners, where they are actually manufacturing their own. They do have steel manufacturing plants. We just opened up ours the other day, just, you know, with the president's particular inauguration of the facility. the high iron facility, a week and a half back. We only opened up ours the other day. We only opened up ours the other day. Now, if you don't know what I'm highlighting to you there is that specifically that is the industrial notion of things. But if I now advance the discussion to another level, for example, to tell you that there are companies in this world that have such large footprints because they started out as they just made an engine for a motorcycle here and then they had to branch out like that. But no one is talking about that in an urban context because obviously we don't know what is the level of necessary investment to take place. But here's the thing. It's not just one company that you need that manufactures the engine. That guy probably just needs another guy that needs to weld the frame for the motorcycle, another guy that needs to make the wheel, meaning the rim with the spokes in it, and you need another guy that can import or buy the tires. If you don't know what I'm explaining to you, this is an ecosystem that you've got to try and build. Nothing is based upon short-term gains. This is not playing a lottery. This is literally building an ecosystem because you are manufacturing and literally assembling the main thing, which is the whole puzzle. All these other guys, you've got to put in orders with them to literally, that guy makes you the sheeted metal. That guy makes you the frame for your motorcycle. And that guy makes your rims. And that the other guy makes your handlebar. The other guy makes your suspension. And the other guy sells you the imported tires. That's all. Look at that ecosystem. Just look at that ecosystem. Are you telling me that we can't make a motorcycle based upon the necessary skill sets that are already here? Based upon the skill sets ultimately to make a prototype of a product and put it at, let's for example say, at one of these expos and shows that we've got going on in Namibia. You really want to tell me that? Another particularly easy to do thing, because when you look at the inputs of the discussion, is the fashion designers. Are you really telling me that there's no fashion designer that can design Namibian made underwear? Or Namibian made clothing? To present a whole lineup. Because you don't have to go for haute couture. If you don't know what haute couture is, meaning the new season, the new in thing, you don't have to go for that. All you've got to go for is it functional? Can people wear it? And is it durable quality? Do you know about double-edged stitching? Do you know about trying to source the best material? Is it too expensive to source it out of the Chinese factories of Shenzhen? Or is there someone that you can talk to here locally that can literally, that cotton that we're supposedly producing somewhere here in Namibia, for someone to literally add value to that cotton that is being harvested later this year and thus sell it to a local Namibian producer? A local Namibian fashion house. Are you really telling me that? Because the discussion, for example, like the lady from the IIBN discussion highlight or indicated, like Helmut and I showed or made mention of Natalia Lukashina, she ultimately highlighted that you need whatever you're producing in your higher education should lead to absorption in your economy. It shouldn't just be blanket training and blanket educating and just saying, yes, let's just look good for the sake of numbers. Let's just give everybody degrees and diplomas and certificates. It doesn't work like that because you need to know what industry you're supplying. You can't just be supplying the service sector. You can't just be supplying the particular sectors that seem like they're already oversaturated. Because here's the thing. Some of the students go and study some of these particular discussions in South Africa. Now, let me even throw in a sort of like a curveball into this discussion even. The curveball is one that is known as South Africa. What is this curveball? This curveball is literally known that because I've got a family member that studied law in South Africa at the University of Pretoria. and they get trained in a different way as opposed to his little sister, who's my niece, being trained here in Windhoek at the University of Namibia. In South Africa, they literally train you to be ready for the working market. Yes, you will still have to do certain particular certification levels, achieve certain particular sort of like recognition levels, you know, as a law graduate and the likes. There's a specific level here in Namibia that they have to meet to be recognized as a practicing law practitioner, not just being recognized as a law graduate. But even in the indications of understanding how the legal system in Namibia works, not the legal system regarding the aspect of representation of clients at the court, but ultimately how, because if you guys did not know, law firms are also businesses. Just so that I tell you that. A law firm is also a business. If you guys did not know that, law firms are businesses. So the thinking, for example, because if a law firm qualifies as the private sector because it's not owned by the government. In many cases, I've heard from this, even though he's a family member, how Namibian law graduates don't understand that they've got to work for clients when they work for law firms. Now that ultimately also shows you a different scenario in terms of how you supply into the private sector and what is needed by the private sector. But before we continue, guys, we've got a short ad break coming up.
We don't just use any yeast to brew the perfect Heineken. We use our unique A yeast. Why? It gives Heineken a unique balanced taste for that refreshing thirst. Ah, not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Coming back from the short break right there and ultimately looking and staring down the last 9 minutes of today's program, dear listeners. Obviously, if you guys did not know, there still is the opportunity for you to call in and ultimately share your perspective and give you insights on the discussion we've had today. The short particular sort of like presentation as well that came through specifically there. And just highlighting the developmental pathway in terms of Namibia and the large BRIC members that obviously are now looking towards diversifying international relations, also into the, you know, having Namibia, engaging in with Namibia a lot more. At the start, from the get-go, there's nothing wrong. Why? Because, for example, there was an indicator that highlighted in terms of during the Cold War, obviously, which is now the new particular Cold War that has now emanated between the United States and China. But if you had to look at the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, the discussion was obviously, you know, it's either, you know, the West or it's the Soviet Union. But when China was primarily working on their international relations landscape during the 80s and now the 90s and the early 2000s and so forth, China was developing friendship. Now, the notion that I've highlighted and that Helmut and I, we've continuously highlighted to you, dear listeners, the reason as to why you would have an international relations minister or ministry is actually to facilitate trade. So you first establish, you know, bilateral relations between the two countries. And then you see if that, those two, is you two as two sovereign states, if you can take this level of relationship to another level. So it's almost like, for any one of you guys that went through the traditional landscape of dating, you know, you first talk to each other. And then from the talking phase, you guys are literally then looking at how you can advance the discussion even further past that. You know, can you try and kiss each other, stuff like that, you know, doing those things. I can't talk about them on air ultimately, but that's the only word I could slip in. So looking at a man-woman relationship, I'm only speaking about man-woman relationship for now, guys, just letting you know. But when you highlight that particular sort of like relationship building landscape, it does technically represent that of between two countries. It technically does represent that of technically how two humans would basically connect with each other in terms of starting off introducing each other to each other, you know, introducing each other, and then introductions are done, and then you try finding out what interests each other have, and then from the interests you then start seeing if you can formally advance this particular connection to another level, and so you start going through each particular level in, until it becomes, you know, pretty tight and pretty close in that regard. Obviously, if you're looking at two humans, usually it's a notion in terms of a union, leading to further particular partnership, close partnership. In the notion of countries, usually it, you know, it looks at formal, healthy trade relations and even, what's the other particular scenario? But it's usually about healthy trade relations and very friendly particular, you know, political and trade related relations that persist. If you guys have never noticed or observed Namibia and South African relations, it's almost the South Africans are happy to see us. They get excited to even be in Namibia. Don't ask me. Don't ask me. I've just observed it. I've observed it with Patrice Motsepe as the CAF president visiting Namibia back in 2023 when he visited President Geingob at State House. I've observed it even in terms of how Ramaphosa also greets or greeted our presidents. It doesn't matter which president. They get happy. They are just excited to meet the Namibian head of state. And technically it's a discussion of, you know what, it's, I don't know if we are viewed that way still, but it's like we are viewed as literally being, you know, technically being like more than neighborly neighbors. But yeah. The landscape obviously means that there's still further chance to grow. However, here's the discussion that's currently taking place in this context of international relations. In this context of international relations, you will start seeing more countries technically doing this thing, looking for partnerships, bilateral relations with each other. What has been warned about Donald Trump's particular disregard for international relations and the, you know, the formality about how to go about treating and dealing with international partners is now something that has thrown many particular planning and thinking out of the window, specifically spooking, you know, global economic growth fears. Well, it has spooked the ambitions for global economic growth to be positive, because now technically the fears have obviously taken over the positivity element. So it's gone from positive to negative, as well as also the indicators based upon who is now a friend specifically of the United States. Now, why I throw that last curveball also in there just before the ad break is just to signal to you specifically that a lot of the countries are now looking towards each other. For example, many of the particular discussions have come out in terms of, yeah, what do these tariffs mean for the AGOA discussion? Don't worry about AGOA. AGOA is going to literally end at the end of this year, in September. Don't worry about AGOA. AGOA specifically was all about African products, and which Trump is correct about, African products not African products being exempted from specific, like, standardized tariff categories that the Americans would apply to areas like the EU, like Japan, like China, any other trade partner. The African countries, us African countries, we were already enjoying preferential treatment. So don't worry about it. The particular onus now falls on us to develop the aspect in terms of potential market loss in the US to be geared towards another direction. For example, if the Americans don't want Namibian beef anymore, can we sell it to the Russians? Can we include our particular export quota to the Chinese? Can we expand our particular sort of like product offering to the European Union? And like we highlighted now, dear listeners, there's another thing that I'm trying to see if I can tend in terms of, you know, gathering content tomorrow is it's the European Sustainable Something Development But it has to do ultimately with CBAM, the carbon border adjustment mechanism. There's a sustainability dimension associated to CBAM, which technically focuses on the agricultural production methods used in your country, and ultimately, you know, what's the carbon footprint of your agricultural methods and your agricultural sector, and technically, you know, can it be exempted from any particular penalties coming through from the European Union? However, in that notion, we'll quickly be taking a short break, dear listeners, and after the break, we'll be coming back and actually ending our discussion here on the Home Run for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll see each other again just after the short break.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
And on that note, particularly, dear listeners, it does bring us to the end for this evening's discussion, for this evening's The Home Run session here on your number one talk radio station. Once again, let's see each other again. Same time, same place tomorrow here at 4:30 on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. This has been The Home Run. Do stay tuned for the next program to come on after the break, and we'll see each other again. Obviously, which will be a Wednesday edition, and enjoy the rest of your programming in our company.
Mukungule kwa tuko maikuto amina apidi kwa mavchaziva. Muvere kusema app ato wakasin chavu kamso, zakale liferide, mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka, kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app, mwikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sfera fama kepe, marizohola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha ni encha falizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali njiramu limu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasfera sesfa app ya imba ize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, smane kakarunga, Africans, ni zengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kereke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Uvele kusema app ato wakasi nchavu kamso, zakale liferide, mise kunani zencha. Kuzwa kwa kushimba lifera zari vuka, kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app, mwikutwe kulibusie mba santo ye mwietuna. Mwikole sfera fama kepe, marizohola mina. Hamuvone, imba encha ni encha falizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini, kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali njiramu limu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasfera sesfa app ya imba kize tatama Elsin ehangano oshiherero omaemuriro Catholic smane kakarunga Africans nizengu zengata Molori zese kachenu haiva mtavera kulisfera sakereke ya mina si ekezwe famu koloko walifera za imba va 081-2358-063 kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalighty.com Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.